Hi everyone, Marty here. Dan and I will be back soon with a special guest to wrap up Season 5. But for now, we're releasing another one of our exclusive Patreon bonus episodes. I think you're going to like this one. Remember that you can get access to all our bonus episodes, extended episodes, bonus content, Discord access, and the ability to make us watch whatever you want, all at our Patreon for just $8 a month. Go to patreon.com/breakingmayberry. And now, it's Garfield time.
I want you to give me, we're going to alternate on it, I want you to give me your 10 best Garfield reactions, all right?
Okay. Let's do this. Yeah.
Your smile appears clear. Wish it wasn't my imagination, but it away with a dream. Your eyes, they tell it all. Called it, heard you got a good heart and you're smart. You got a good head on your shoulders. That's what turns a nigga on. Strong things that I have, you'll probably never find out ever. I'll admire from afar. Star, keep doing all the great things you're doing. You got it going on, young lady.
Jesus Christ.
Garfield! Okay, all right. Welcome, podcast listeners, Patreon subscribers, to the Garfcast. It finally happened after years of doing Marty's Comics Corner that we are just doing a comics movie, a comic strip movie. One of our newest patrons has requested that Dan and I handle Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties, the sequel to the original Garfield film. Garfield Tale of Two Kitties came out in 2006, and it stars a very, very bored Bill Murray as the titular fat cat.
So I can't do a dramatic reveal now about why we are doing this episode. Is our mysterious Patreon who requested this movie. This was my fucking fiance, who has been trying to make me watch this for over a year. And reached the point of signing up for our patrons, so I have no choice. Which,
why?
She fucking loves movies like this. She does not think they are good, but this is extremely her shit. On a Thursday night, we'll be like, hey, do you want to watch the Brady Bunch movie 2 again? Her backup, she wanted us to watch Cats vs. Dogs. And
oh man,
yeah, she was kind of angling for this episode to be not anything we could do a podcast about, so that she could make us watch Cats versus Dogs in addition to this. But she loves like semi crappy late 90s early 2000s like family films. That is her shit.
Anything where James Marsden talks to a CGI rabbit, yes, is like yeah, it's all about it. Okay.
The Marmaduke movie, Owen Wilson voicing a dog, but all over it. That's her shit. She's locked and loaded and ready to go on that. But this is the one where it was my line, and I was like, I cannot go down this road with you. I cannot watch Garfield Tale of Two Kitties. To which she responded, you bet, motherfucker. So this podcast has turned into a form of abuse against me, basically.
You know what, man? Arden, I feel like I should judge for this. I should judge you. I should judge her. But You know what? I mean, how many times have you heard me talk about fucking Funky Winker Bean or whatever? I have opinions on Luann.
Yeah.
So I mean, whatever. We all have our weird crosses to bear. So Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties. Why not the first Garfield movie? Why did she make us watch specifically the sequel?
Because this one's significantly worse.
It is really bad.
Yes.
It is awful.
Yeah. The first Garfield I saw in theaters as a kid, and it's one of the movies. Normally you could just put me in front of any movie as a child and I'd be like, yeah, that was great. But this one I was like, all right, that clearly wasn't that good.
I mean, no, the first Garfield came out in 2004. You were not a child.
Was I not a child? Okay, that's
you
why
were
I
not
didn't.
A child.
That's why I was
you,
not impressed by it.
You were definitely a teenager.
Okay. Wow, why did I see this as a fucking teenager? Damn. All right, but yeah, Garfield, Tale of Two Kitties, did not see this one. I remember Garfield being a movie. This was...
All right, okay, before we get into anything here, I just don't want to talk about this movie, and I don't want to talk about this movie so much that I'm going to read you the featured review. I just discovered this while we were talking. This is the featured review of Garfield, Tale of Two Kitties on IMDb. The headline is, "Let me tell you a story. Okay, I admit that I watched this movie, but thankfully I watched it on a pirate DVD bought for $2 from a dodgy-looking bloke on Sadia Triumphanala in Moscow. He liked my girlfriend's red shoes and said they look like the shoes of a princess, which she is, of course. I like her red shoes, too. They are very nice shoes."
This guy rules!
They have embroidery and flat heels, but they got very wet when we got caught in the rain when we went to Novopolsky Monastery. Neither of us had a jacket or an umbrella, so we got pretty wet. But it was worth it because the monastery is beautiful. If you ever go to Moscow, you should pay this place a visit. It's stunningly beautiful. Go to Taganskaya on the circular line, and it's a 5-minute walk along Kamenishki Street. Or at least it should be if you go with someone who knows how to read a street map. Little fucking dig at his red-shoed girlfriend. Still, it was a nice walk in the rain, and we got there eventually, even though the red shoes got very wet. Now, being that Novopolsky is a Russian Orthodox monastery, women must cover their heads and also cover their shoulders and should not be wearing trousers or short skirts. Red shoes are okay. I'm halfway through. So just inside the main gate, there is a big box of scarves, shawls, and wraparound skirts for the use of any woman that may be unsuitably attired for entry into the church. And I must say that my beautiful girlfriend looked rather wonderful wearing all of the things.
Oh my God.
I have pictures if you would like to see them. The inside of the church is decorated with painted walls and ceilings, and there are stunning golden icons that look fabulous in the candlelight. There are no electric lights. The Russian choir sings, and priests walk among the congregation who stand and chant. There are no seats. It is one of the most spiritual experiences you will ever have. Quite extraordinary. It is almost like being transported back to some medieval age. Anyway, why am I telling you all this? Quite simply because it is much more interesting than talking about this movie. As I said, we watched it on a dodgy pirate DVD that went on sale the day after the movie opened in Moscow. This, as it turned out, was a very good thing because it meant that I couldn't see or hear the movie very well. So we turned it off after 20 minutes, and that's the best way to watch it, in my opinion.
This should be how... One, I gotta find this motherfucker's letterboxed because I bet it rules. And two, this should just be how you do all, like, really bad or really uninterested reviews, is instead of talking about, like, how fucking bland the Apple Dumpling Kids were, Roger Ebert should have just been like, let me tell you about my kick-ass wife. Huh? You want to hear about...
I mean, Roger Ebert did talk about his wife a lot, but yeah.
Yeah, that should just be... You should just be allowed to, like, use the space and be like, listen, I'm just going to tell you something interesting about the world. You have to go to Venice and try this pasta dish. You just gotta go there. You go to this restaurant. Just like travel tourism tips. Oh my God, that rules.
So thank you, IMDb user Terraplane, for trolling the IMDb reviews, I guess. Like, a wicked amount of trolling. Okay, Dan, before we get into this, so we've talked about we've talked about Brianna's feelings towards this type of movie. Dan, how do you feel about the G-Man himself? What are your feelings on Garfield?
Let's see. Okay, so I used to be a daily comic strip reader. The comic strip was consistently not my favorite. I don't think I ever... I would get to Garfield. I would go through Foxtrot and everything else. And then eventually, when I ran out of stuff to do, I would go to Garfield and I would go, huh, all right. Like, it was the last decent comic before I had to go to Family Fucking Circus. Like, it was my last stop.
I would say that on average, Family Circus is funnier than Garfield these days, but...
Yeah, I don't think I'd fight that claim. But yeah, it was my last, and it was never, I never disliked it. I was never like, this sucks, but I was also never like, ooh, can't wait to see what Garfield's up to.
And that's what Garfield is meant to be, right? Yeah. Garfield is meant to be just beige. It's not meant to do anything. So,
the cartoon was legit though, because the cartoon was like, all right, Garfield's fighting in the Colosseum, or like Garfield is now George Washington and he is talking about lasagna in the boat. Like he is.
So
Odie is a red coat. They're doing that. That was good.
So I thought so. I did a lot of thought. I did a lot of soul searching about this. Right. Because as much of a comics guy as I am, as much as we've done Marty's, this is going to be one long Marty's Comics Corner. I did some research and some thinking. I went and watched a few episodes of the cartoon. And I think my perspective has now officially stated, man, fuck Garfield.
Kind of fuck Garfield.
Fuck Garfield. Look, there is a narrative that I think people play into that Garfield used to be good and used to have some sort of substance to it. But then Jim Davis sold out and it just kind of turned to the bland nothingness it is today. And I want to tell you, I want to just say, that is some revisionist history bullshit. Mm-hmm. Garfield has never been good. It was better. When people were putting some effort into it, when Jim Davis would have to occasionally draw a thing, it was better because they would attempt a joke. But you got to understand something about Garfield. It is now and has always been and will always be merchandise.
Yeah.
Jim Davis worked in marketing. And the entire history behind the creation of Garfield is basically, well, Peanuts was getting really popular. And I saw that Charles Schulz was getting a bunch of money from licensing the Peanuts characters, specifically Snoopy, and I wanted that. Jim Davis said, Lord, I see what you've done for others.
Yeah.
And he basically, literally, and he just created a character. He was like, okay, well, Schulz has already got the dog. Mickey is a mouse. No one's done a cat yet. We haven't done a cat yet, right? So here it is. And he drew, he's not a very good artist to begin with. So he drew a shitty cat. Jim Davis did have a comic strip. He worked in marketing, but he did have a comic strip that was about gnats. And he would tell jokes about these little fly creatures. And they were jokes about insects. And it was, And it didn't get anywhere because everyone kind of said, no one likes bugs.
Yeah.
No one likes gnats. Dan Ludwig will light this paper on this newspaper on fire and then burn down his own house with it. Mm-hmm. If you put in a strip about gnats. So he was like, okay, well, lots of people like cats. Here's a cat. And that's it. Thus, Garfield was born, you know? And over the years, it's been very clear that he writes Garfield as plain and flat as possible. You know, internet jokesters have said for years, why does Garfield hate Mondays? He doesn't have a job. Yeah, but you have a job. you hate Mondays. Garfield hates Mondays because
Garfield
you hate
Mondays.
Garfield
is a mirror held up to society. No, he's like he's just a fucking, like, just designed to be projected upon.
Yeah, before hashtag relatable was a thing, Garfield was designed to be hashtag relatable. Why does Garfield love lasagna? Because everyone loves lasagna. Right? Lasagna's delicious. And it's a food that can be adapted to everybody's taste. You can have vegan lasagna, but everybody loves lasagna. Like, Garfield is merchandise. Garfield, there has never been any artistry to Garfield. I'm not gonna say never. Like, somewhere in the echelons of Garfield's history, there are moments where Jim Davis gets bored and occasionally tries to do something. Specifically, the one that everyone points to is Garfield, His Nine Lives, which is a special book and a TV special that had like nine different stories and nine different animation styles that got kind of dark in certain places. That one is pretty good. But for the most part, Garfield was designed to sell things. He's designed to sell coffee mugs and t-shirts.
He is
a souvenir stand of a comic strip. There's nothing good about him.
It is fitting that Garfield embodies as many of the seven deadly sins as possible, because he basically represents the ultimate, like, just the fact that capitalism will eventually eat all art. I will say, off of that, how much did Heathcliff fucking rule?
Is the man!
Heathcliff kicks ass! Because Heathcliff doesn't give a fuck! Like, Heathcliff was a psycho. Garfield was a ripoff of Heathcliff, right? He just stole
Heathcliff. Heathcliff does predate Garfield, yes.
He just took Heathcliff's whole deal, and instead of making this character, like, a methed out Dennis the Menace, let's just make him a fat, tired bitch.
All of this is said, right? I want to make 2 points. Number one, it has never made sense to make a movie about Garfield. It has never made sense to make video games about Garfield. It has never made sense to do, like, the Garfield cartoon. Because, and it's this weird disconnect, because in the comic strip, Garfield intentionally doesn't do anything. He comments. He looks at stuff, and he does what we do. He just comments on things going on around him. Garfield does not go on adventures. Garfield, the comic strip, does not have, like, long ongoing storylines, at least not since the 80s. Occasionally, Garfield used to go to a diner or visit the family farm, and he would remark on stuff then. Now, Garfield has, like, one setting, and it is the, like, monotone inside of the Garfield house. Sometimes he goes to the vet.
Yeah.
Sometimes he might still go to the diner, but that is very few and far between. So it's never made a lot of sense. So they would take this character and put, like, now he's Professor Garfield and he'll teach you science on the on this website. Oh, now it's Garfield Racing or whatever. And it has never made any sense. It's not like Mario, right?
Yeah.
Mario, it makes sense to have him do racing because Mario lives in a fantasy world and he's always doing stuff. You know, the cartoon that you mentioned, I watched a few episodes of the cartoon, and the cartoon is very, like, weirdly postmodern. In that, you're right, Garfield is in all these situations, but he doesn't do anything. He just comments on it. It's, oh, I'm George Washington now. I watched one where Garfield's picnic basket was stolen by a race of green Smurfs. They were just a weird underground race of characters. They were very clearly a parody of the Smurf. And the green Smurfs use Italian food for money, and they eat cash money as food.
Remember that!
Yeah.
I watched it.
You know who it doesn't stick with? Garfield. Garfield basically goes, huh, that's weird. Grabs his lasagna and leaves.
He's just the worst part of his show. They don't even do it all the way with him, because halfway through each episode, they're like, all right, well, Garfield fucking sucks. You guys want to see some cartoon characters? And then they go to the Barnyard Friends or whatever.
Go to U.S. Acres. Yeah. Who are actual characters. Anyway, so Dan, as we talk about Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties, I want to play a game.
Yes.
I want to play a game. This game is called Garf or No Garf. Mm-hmm. And the way that this game works is I will describe a product or service. And you have to tell me if this is an officially licensed Paws, Inc. Garfield product or something that I made up.
Right.
Okay. All right. I've got a big list here, so I'm just going to do a couple. So let's start with Garfield Eats, a ghost kitchen Garfield-themed restaurant featuring lasagna, Garfield-shaped pizza, and Garfaccinos, with two locations in Ontario, Canada, and one in Dubai.
I know that that exists for a fact. I saw that news story, and I know that they were basically running at a loss for, like, 4 years. Like, it was not a well-performing restaurant because it was in Canada and Dubai.
Yeah, I should say one location in Ontario. The Toronto one closed down. No word on the Dubai one. But yes, that one is true. So Garf on that one. Garf is true, no Garf.
Right.
Pajama Jammin' Garfield, an animated plush Garfield that wears a blue and white nightcap nightshirt and carries a red mug that reads Hot Stuff. When squeezed, it dances and plays the song Hot Stuff by Donna Summers.
Yes, that exists.
That is also true.
Yes, it 100%. Is, never doubted that for a second.
It is part of a line of dancing Garfields, including one that wears a leather jacket and says and plays bad to the bone.
Okay. Jesus Christ.
All right, I've got a list of these. I've got a huge list. I'm just going to keep throwing them out throughout this. Let's talk about Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties, which your fiancé paid you to do.
Yes, my fiancé gave me money to do this.
You don't have like a shared bank account or anything, right? It's not like she gave you your money.
No, she gave me her hard-earned cash to make me do this.
It's okay. It's not like she like took $8 out of the grocery budget and was just like, we don't need veggie burgers this week.
I mean, there is a chance that she just like was like after doing this, she was like, fuck you, Dan, and just threw like $10 out of my wallet.
That's what I would do.
I wouldn't even be mad if that's something that she had done.
So as you may have guessed from this, the title, Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties, which came out in 2006, was directed by Tim Hill, written by Joel Cohen, who is not a Cohen brother.
Yeah.
And directed by Tim Hill, who was a SpongeBob SquarePants writer, who also directed Grumpy Cat's Worst Christmas Ever. Did direct Alvin and the Chipmunks. Also directed the worst Muppets movie, Muppets from Space. So, not a great track record on Tim Hill.
So, you have heard Bill Murray's excuse for making these movies, right?
Right. Bill Murray claims that when he saw Joel Cohen, K-O-C-O-H-E-N, he thought it was a Cohen brother, Joel Cohen, C-O-E-N, which is a scam you can only play once.
Well, that, to be clear, is absolute horseshit from Bill Murray.
Such bullshit.
Yes, such bullshit. And said with a completely straight fucking face, as a very mean dig against the people that made this movie. Of like, well, I only did it because I thought these guys didn't suck shit. And, which does not explain why he made a fucking second one.
Yeah, I mean, did they have you in a real contract for this, man? Were you really in a bind? I mean, although it would explain, like, he does not sound interested at all. Like, he definitely did all of his recording for this in one day. Like, did, like, one take and then just was, and basically just smoked the biggest, fattest blunt in between the lines. Like,
which
sounds like shit. He sounds so bored.
Which is a huge problem, because there are large stretches of the movie where it clearly just says, Bill Murray improvises a bunch of super funny dialogue. And then Bill Murray is like, hey, everybody, I'm Elvis, King of the Cats, wa-da-da-da-da, yeah, let's all shake our butts and dance, yeah, and it's like, he just does not give a fuck, and they've just, like, they've been like, Bill Murray, can you Bill Murray it up a little bit, can you give us a little bit of that Bill Murray energy, and he's just like, fuck you, wa-da-da-da-da, I'm dancing cat, yeah, watch me Drake dance, like, it's disastrous.
So let's talk about the Murray counterpart then, the Curry.
Yes.
From Murray to Curry, because the plot of this movie, such as it is that there is a another cat in London who is like a royal cat, from in the House of Carlyle. So it's like this royal cat who looks exactly like Garfield, and he is voiced by Tim Curry, who. I can't tell how much effort Curry is putting into this.
It's very hard to say.
It's very hard. Because Tim Curry, even at his worst, still sounds like Tim Curry. So he's just kind of wandering around. Meow, meow, meow. And by the way, I think if you're going to have a cat, Tim Curry is a good voice for a cat. Tim Curry sounds like all cats.
Honestly, Tim Curry would have been a better choice for Garfield than Bill Murray. Because Bill Murray's whole thing is like, hey, I'm really high energy, woohoo! And Tim Curry is like, even when Tim Curry is high energy, he sounds like he's emerging from a coma.
Well, lots of people thought that Bill Murray was the voice of Garfield in Garfield and Friends.
Right.
The voice of Garfield in Garfield and Friends was Lorenzo Music, who also voiced the animated Ray Venkman in the Ghostbusters cartoon. So Lorenzo Music played a Bill Murray character, and now Bill Murray took over Lorenzo Music character.
Yes.
Which is a fun little bit of symmetry, but also, who fucking cares?
Yeah, dumb as shit. So, I will say this, in the argument that Tim Curry is actually putting his back into it, have you ever seen Tim Curry's cutscenes in Command and Conquer?
It's that level. It's the space!
Space! Even when he's in that. Tim Curry clearly does not give a shit about whatever he is saying, but he still goes like, you know what? I'm here. I'm in the desk. I'm wearing a Soviet officer uniform. Let's have some fun with it. Which I think is what Tim Curry was like. This be like, fuck it, man. I'm in the booth. Let's go. Let's put some pepper on it.
So there's a royal cat who looks like Garfield. And in a twist that is absolutely not derivative of any other material that has ever existed, dies, or the lady of the house dies, and she leaves everything to this cat, Prince, who can talk. And the nephew, the scheming nephew who wants rights to the home and to the estate, in his next in line, plans to bump Prince off. And there's also a whole barnyard scene, which is just Babe. This movie simultaneously rips off the Aristocats and Babe at the same time. And of course, Prince and the Pauper as well. It's a Prince and Pauper story. It's not even, I get why you called it A Tale of Two Kitties. That's a pun, but it's not A Tale of Two Cities. It's the Prince and the Pauper story.
Yes.
With the doppelgangers and the
sword. Which, the Prince and the Pauperent, motherfucker. You idiots. Right. You dipshits. It's right there. But, okay. So, I just gotta jump right in to something. The first movie sets up a clear internal logic. Garfield is the only animal that can fucking talk, or not talk. Nobody can understand what Garfield is saying. But is the only animal capable of sentience.
They use a real dog for Odie.
Yes. So they clearly establish that Garfield is an anomaly. He is a sentient cat with an internal life. All other animals are just animals. And then this, they say, well, that is true, except this magical barnyard of talking animals. They have a parrot that can talk, mice that can talk, rabbits, geese, a fucking talking bull or whatever. So they then flip it to, well, actually, all animals can talk and are sentient. It's just fucking Odie is the only one that is not able to communicate. Or maybe it's like, well, only English animals can talk. Like, it is local to the British Isles. That is why Garfield is capable of sentience, because he comes from the same bloodline of British cats. He was just brought to America. Actually, I think I just talked myself into this making sense live on air. That actually
good for you,
tracks.
Man. Great. Right. But so I want to talk about that. Put a pin in that point, because I want to bring it up later with the big dog, the Rottweiler.
Yes.
Okay. So the Rottweiler assassin. That's the premise of this. There is a cat named Prince. Prince is bumped off and thrown into the river in a basket. And all of the animals are worried because scheming nephew, whose name is Dargis, who is played by Billy Connolly, is planning to kill them or move them out or make them, like, just make them gone because he wants to build a condo or resort or something on it's all very stupid. At the same time, Garfield is in London for some reason. So, he's in London because
okay, so back to the beginning of the movie. John, played by Breckenmeyer, who by Breckenmeyer's own admission is a dog shit actor.
Yes.
Although I do think he was bad in Rat Race 2, even though Rat Race fucks. He was still bad in that.
The only time that Breckenmeyer has ever been good was when he was in Clueless, and even in Clueless he was basically just doing an impression of Sean Penn in Fast Times. Like,
yeah, he Breckenmeyer will tell you straight up with no hesitation he's a shit actor.
He's not a very good actor. He's a better writer than an actor. Yeah.
Yes. Like,
that's his whole deal.
But so Breckenmeyer is proposing to his girlfriend, who is Jennifer Love Hewitt. Garfield sabotages it. This was the first instance. Garfield comes in through the cat door, and it is the first instance of something that annoyed the shit out of me, which is Garfield just breakdances sometimes now. Like,
yeah.
Garfield will enter a room, breakdance briefly, pop and lock, and then be like, all right, where's lasagna? I'm tired. I'm sleepy. I'm a lazy cat. It's like, you're not a lazy cat, man. You just, like, you just breakdance for, like, 5 minutes. You're clearly not lethargic. All the lasagna isn't gluttony. It's calories that you need to burn to pop and lock across America.
Again, this is something that it never makes sense to adapt Garfield to these things, because you got to embed him with some abilities that Garfield, the character, just does not have. It does not make sense for Garfield to be a video game platformer. It does not make sense for him to be running around to do escape plans or anything. None of this is stuff that he does in the comic strip, because in the comic strip he does as little as possible. And you rectify this through the magical power of not giving a shit.
Yeah. They just basically, an executive just came in and was like, so all the kids, it's the early 2000s, all the kids are just nuts about breakdancing. They just want everything to breakdance. Can we make Garfield breakdance a little bit? And everybody in the room was like, I don't give a fuck. Yes, Garfield will breakdance. How many times do you want Garfield to breakdance? 10? 20? Garfield, put a number in there. If you want, the whole movie will just be Garfield breakdancing. We don't give a shit. That makes our jobs easier.
Another thought about this scene where Garfield enters. There's some moments where, like, John is not in the room. And Garfield, like, climbs up on a chair. And it will, like, be Garfield in the chair. And then it'll cut to John talking. Garfield in the chair, cut to John talking. And I thought about it. And I realized, how insulting is it for the cinematographer to come in and realize that his job for the day is spend some time just filming this empty chair. Because they're going to CGI in the cat later. And there's so many shots like this. It's just like, okay, just film this bed. There'll be a cartoon cat in it later. Okay, just film this tree. There'll be a cartoon cat later.
Yeah.
Man, what a bullshit job. Like, at that point, I'm sitting there going, man, I should not have gone to film school. This was a bad idea.
Yeah.
I should have got a certificate. I could have been a carpenter.
How fucking depressing must this have been of just being like, all right, Jennifer Love Hewitt, successful actress. I want you to look at this ottoman and pretend that there's a dancing... I don't know. She was very successful at this point in time. She was doing good.
I had to think about that, too. I when she walked in, I was like, Jennifer Love Hewitt, you're too good for this. And then I was like, no, you're not.
She was too good for this at a point in time. And then there must have been a moment where she was standing in a fucking living room and somebody said, all right, Jennifer Love Hewitt, there's a dancing cat on this ottoman. I need you to look at it and go, Garfield, what are you doing? And she just went like, oh my God, I used to be in fucking movies. I used to matter in America. What has happened to me? Like, that must have just hit every single time of like, all right, Billy Connolly, a cat just said just farted at you. Pretend that the fart was really stinky, Billy Connolly. And he just has to be like, okay, all right, I gotta pay off my second house. Fuck, this hurts.
No, I don't think that's
stopped coming.
I don't think that's true for Connolly. I don't think Connolly has always been a dude. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, John is planning to propose. John is planning to propose to Liz, his girlfriend, who is who is Garfield's vet, and he doesn't get a chance because Liz comes in and says that she has to fly to London to be the speaker at a conservancy. Why does she have to be the speaker at this conservancy, Dan?
Because Jane Goodall is busy nursing a sick chimp. So that was the first big question of, so John is dating a local vet in the middle of fucking just suburban America. Who is the plan B to Jane Goodall? She's not working in like an animal studies department. She's not an animal scientist. She just gives animals like fucking like checkups, basically. So who is this lady?
She's just a vet. Those people at those conservancy who wanted to see Jane Goodall are going to be so disappointed.
Yeah. Like, they were like, all right, I wanted Jane Goodall to explain gorilla mating habits to me, but I guess this veterinarian will tell me the best way to declaw your cat with minimal discomfort. That's cool. I have a master's degree in zoology, but let's let this fucking lady just explain stuff to me.
Diane Fossey was the gorilla lady. Jane Goodall is chimps. But I did have to go ahead and look. Okay, Diane Fossey had been dead, long dead at that point. I was like, was Fossey available? No, she had been dead for a long time.
I just assumed that Jane Goodall did it all. I just assumed that she was like, monkeys, chimps, gorillas, fuck it, throw it at Jane Goodall. I can handle it, man.
You're a British Conservancy. Fucking, just call David Attenborough. He's wandering down the street just narrating things.
Just David Attenborough sitting in a park narrating sparrow behavior.
Yeah. I'm not going to do an Attenborough. I can't do an Attenborough. But he's just like talking about the behaviors of pigeons to anybody on the who will listen. Just grab him.
The mighty pigeon bathes in the trash water, from covering its wings with grease so that it may fly better through the evening. And then somebody is just comes to be like, all right, Mr. Attenborough, come on home. And he's just like, the stray alley cat, the fierce lion of London's backwoods.
So Garfield doesn't want John to marry Liz for reasons?
Because he sees him and John as bros. Like, which, again, counter Garfield, because Garfield could give a fuck whether or not John lives or dies, but instead Garfield's like, hey, come on, bud! We're pals, man. She's gonna lady up our whole bachelor vibe.
So John gets it in his mind to go to London, where Liz is, and spend the week with her while she's getting ready for a conservancy thing, and then propose in London.
Okay, so I have two things. So how... I clocked this. How far into this movie would you have Garfield euthanized?
What?
Through most of the proposal scene before I was like, oh, this cat's fucking dead. We got an appointment in the morning.
We're getting into the Daria, why don't they just put Marmaduke down? question mark here. How far would I... How time long would I go until I had Garfield euthanized? Well, if anybody x-rayed my bag at the airport, that would have been not a problem, because Garfield is supposed to be in a kennel. He and Odie break out of the kennel, and they get into John's suitcase, throw out all of his clothes, and that's how they get to London.
Okay, this is, as Garfield is breaking out of the kennel, I do want to bring up my segment for this episode, which is CGI Butthole Watch 2023. Because at one point, Brianna stopped the movie and we were at HBO Max's dog shit. It doesn't show your current runtime, but it shows how much you have left in the movie remaining. 1 hour, 11 minutes, and 10 seconds left. There was much debate over whether or not they showed Garfield's CGI butthole as he was climbing into the car. It is a matter of fierce debate. I am fairly certain that they put a butthole on that cat.
I feel like you would have to. It would be the only cat-like thing about Garfield.
They definitely, somebody was like, hey man, it's like one thing we got. It's just another couple of pixels. Why don't we just slap a butthole on this cat? And that'll just be something for us.
That's just a little thing for us. Yeah, no.
Yeah,
we're overworked, and honestly, I'm so bored. So
yeah.
Let's do this.
We're already here till midnight. Let's just put a butthole on the cat, man.
You want to do a Garf or no Garf?
Hit me with a Garf or no Garf.
Garfield, Am I Cool or What? Is a 1991 music album with various blues and R&B artists performing songs about or inspired by Garfield. It includes B.B. King performing a song called Monday Morning Blues.
I'm going to be wrong, but I want that to not exist. So I'm going to try to will myself into a universe where no Garf.
That is a Garf, my friend.
Motherfuck!
That exists. That's real.
BB King.
They got BB King.
What year was this? How thick in
1991.
Garfield? 1991. Oh, that's I feel like that's a little early in Garfield Mania. Fuck. Oh, Jesus Christ, King. What were you doing?
Garfield Quest, a Nintendo DS platformer where Garfield is transported to an Arthurian medieval setting and must gather lasagna ingredients from dragons and knights.
So, in the ones where it's no Garf, did you make these up?
Yes.
Okay. No Garf. I'm going to say
no Garf.
That's...
No Garf. I made that up. Okay. I made that one up.
I was like, that one has Marty's fingerprints all over it.
No Garf. No Garf. Okay. All right. Back to the plot. So,
I just have to come up with video games that you would play.
There it is. That is why Garfield is in London, and that is why he is able to be mistaken for the royal cat Prince, voiced by Tim Curry.
So, yeah, at this point, they cut to Tim Curry playing Prince, who is the heir to an estate that was owned by an eccentric duchess. Loved her talking CGI cat, and also used her estate as sort of like a wildlife reserve, where she just had farm animals, but also she just let as many loose animals roam the property as she could. Like, she was just like, yeah, fuck it, let a bunch of goats wander onto the property. Who gives a shit? I love these animals. I love these little guys. And within that system, Prince has also been declared king of the local animals, so he is also the animal ruler. The Duchess has recently died, and, yeah, as you mentioned, bequeathed everything to the cat. There is a couple of points. There's a bulldog that... we should say up top, don't fucking watch this movie. Just sometimes you guys watch the movies with us, sometimes you don't. You're good. You're good. Don't watch the movie.
There's a bulldog voiced by Bob Hoskins.
Yes. Oh, that's another one that's got a sting for old Bob, huh? That's like... Is this before or after Mario? This is
long
after
Mario. It's like 15 years after Mario.
This is in the Bob Hoskins pantheon of, oh man, I used to be King Lear.
I gotta wonder, like, was he diagnosed with cancer at that point or something? Like, was he just like, I don't give a shit anymore.
Let's just get my kids some fucking money.
Yeah.
Let's set up the Hoskins estate. Yeah, I could see that. There is a parrot that is conniving and trying to steal the throne.
Voiced by Richard E. Grant.
Yes. Jesus Christ, Richard. Actually, you know what? I don't feel as bad for the people doing the voicing of the CGI animals, because it was probably like, an afternoon of work?
Yeah, exactly.
And they at least had the dignity of not having to stare at a tennis ball and pretend it's a cat.
Correct.
Yeah. Introducing Billy Connolly, who I at first thought was John Cleese, and then I was very relieved to find out it was not. Because that would have been a bummer to have to deal with his bullshit for an entire...
I don't want to see John Cleese do anything.
Yeah. But Billy Connolly, who is pretty kick-ass. I like Billy Connolly. Whenever he shows up in something, I'm like, oh, fuck yeah. Billy Connolly is really, for all intents and purposes, the star of this movie. He is the evil nephew who is scheming to take control of the manor. He... gets all of the best jokes. He does all of the physical comedy. He is the most acting against people and real animals.
Yes.
He does all the slapstick. He has all the dramatic monologues. He has the most, like, comedic journey.
And I would say he's the only actor.
Yeah. The last third of it is just Billy Connolly going insane. And I will say, I think Billy Connolly's pretty fucking good in this.
Yeah, Connolly's funny. Connolly's putting in the work.
Connolly is, like, legit. Like, Connolly, you could put him in a much better movie, and you wouldn't have to change anything about what he's doing.
Oh, speaking of a much better movie, I gotta say something. There's one point that, I went nuts. There's a scene where John is checking into the hotel. Liz doesn't know he's there yet. And there's a bellhop who's got, looks like a young Mark Addy. And this bellhop only has a few lines, but he's, thank you, sir. Very good, sir. Yeah, very helpful bellhop. And Breckenmeyer says, oh, how do I look? And the bellhop says, Hugh Grant, sir. Okay. All right. And then he sends the bellhop, says, hey, will you give this note to the girl in room 410? Oh, and also give her this. And he hands her a flower. And then the bellhop says, Cary Grant, sir. And that's such a good line.
That's such a good
line. And the bellhop actor delivers it so well. And it's in this fucking movie. Like, that's such a good little bit, that Hugh Grant, Cary Grant thing. And it's in this.
Yeah.
It's in this fucking dog shit. What the hell? Just transport that entire scene to any other movie.
These are the people that came up with that line? These are the motherfuckers that got there first? Motherfuck!
I'm so mad about it. And I'll give it to that bellhop guy. The bellhop actor really sells it too. That helps.
It is, and here is the thing that pisses me off about that line, is it is immediate preceded with Breckenmeyer's going like, hey, bellhop, how do I look? And the bellhop goes like, I'm not gay, sir. I'm not gay. I don't like jet men. And he's like, no, I'm proposing to a girl. And he's like, all right, now we're going to get into the good part of
it. Yeah,
so they just do like a little bit of a gay panic joke, which, eh. Garfield is in London now. He's stowed away in John's bag, threw away all of his clothes. John takes this extremely well. Prince is kidnapped by the nephew, Billy Connolly, thrown into a picnic basket, and then the picnic basket is thrown into the river. So that is how their paths start to cross.
There's a groundskeeper. His name is Smithy or something like that. And Smithy is the guy who takes care of all the animals. Smithy goes out looking for Prince, and he finds Garfield, who is wandering the streets of London after he and Odie go out sightseeing, I guess, basically.
In like the designated part of the movie that is actually that the kids enjoy, which is like Garfield running around London doing bits, but it's breakdancing in front of landmarks, peeing on one of the British guards' legs, like stuff like that.
Yeah, that's it, and that's fine, whatever. There is like some kind of foreshadowing that involves the Queen's corgis, which is basically Garfield saying, look at those royal corgis. I wish I was royal. That would be cool. And then he's picked up by Smithy, the groundskeeper, and he takes Garfield in place of Prince. Everyone in this movie is very astounded that sometimes cats look like other cats. And that includes Liz, the veterinarian. A veterinarian so good that she can fill in for Jane Goodall, but is amazed that there are two orange cats that look alike. Granted, they are the only two orange cats on the planet with that disgusting, weird, glassy, doll-eyed, like, creep. Can we talk about the Garfield design on this? I have no problem with the Garfield design, except for these weird, dead, glassy doll eyes that they put on them. They're not quite anime eyes. They don't look like Garfield's eyes. I think the problem is pupils. Garfield's eyes do not lend themselves to having pupils, or I guess irises. In this case, he is irises.
Well, that's kind of the thing, is like, they're not like two Garfields, like two orange cats. They're like two Garfields. They let two of these sins against God onto the planet. Like, nature made this mistake twice and created one of these CGI abominations again. Like, that's, because Garfield looks, I wouldn't say he looks like shit. Like, he doesn't look that bad. The fur animation is actually, like, is kind of good. But yeah, it's the eyes. The eyes are, it's too much. It wouldn't be that bad if everything was at that CGI level, but it just looks fucking weird.
So now Garfield is king of the animals at this estate. Yes. Or at least they're pretending that he is, because they need the cat alive or they need him there. Until the, like, lawyers can do a thing, or... Why do children's movies have so many legal logistics in them?
Okay, this is a thing that I wanted to use this as an avenue to talk about, which is fucking... I've watched a lot of these fucking movies lately, where there is a... either an existing IP cartoon animal or a new type of cartoon animal, and it is running around a real human world. And the thing that I have noticed about all of these is it is a movie about normal human stuff.
Yes.
But also there's a dancing animal there. Like, we watched the new Tom and Jerry movie recently. It is mostly a movie about the difficulties of managing an upscale hotel. And also, like, a rich guy wants to spend too much money on his wedding. And also, Tom and Jerry are just, like, in the background of every scene hitting each other with hammers.
I mean,
like,
there's a reason for that, right? And the reason for that is that Garfield is expensive to make. Billy Connolly is cheap to have him just run around and sexually harass, like, women who show up on stage.
Yeah.
It's in character. I want to say that is the character doing it, not Billy Connolly himself.
Yeah. No, Billy Connolly, as far as we know, consummate gentleman while making this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, but no, I mean, like, it's cheap. It's because it's way cheaper to deal with the human shit.
Yeah. Right? But to briefly go to this, Billy Connolly hits on every single woman with a pulse that comes onto the property. He's horrible at it. He's really bad.
He straight up propositions Jennifer Love Hewitt and says, I will donate millions of dollars to this animal conservancy if you suck my dick.
Like, yes.
That I'm not reading too much between the lines. He said, what would you say if I donated one of these priceless oil paintings to your conservancy? And she says, I would say thank you. And then he goes, well, how would you say thank you?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, so that is clearly.
He's not even like, I could open my checkbook. You just have to grab dinner with me and we could chat a bit further about my philanthropy. He's explicitly like, hey, I'll give you a bunch of money if you suck this old man's dick. Like, just knows the subtlety of a freight train every single time. And he doesn't even, like, he's not even like, hey, I'm pretty fun to hang out with. Maybe we hook up, whatever. By the way, I'm rich. He's like, listen, I'm horrible to be around and to be on a date with and to have sex with. It's terrible. You're going to hate it and be miserable, but I'll give you money. Like, just such a low self-esteem.
So when he's not propositioning women, he's trying to kill a cat. Because, of course, he's very confused that Garfield, or in his brain, Prince, is there. He's like, I already killed this cat. So he's spending half of his time doing one thing. But the other half, he's like, how can I kill this cat? One of his schemes is he finds a Rottweiler guard dog who's just around and gives him the scent of Prince/Garfield's pillow. And it's like, okay, here you go. Kill this thing. And as you mentioned, Dan, since all animals here now have sentience,
yeah,
this dog knows that he's about to murder. This dog knows that his job is to commit an act of murder and to take another animal's soul, right?
Yes.
And he says, like, yep, kill, kill, kill. He's an assassin, but he's also a very stupid assassin. And they trick him by distracting him into getting the scent of Billy Connolly's trousers. So now, instead of wanting to bite a cat, he wants to bite Billy Connolly's pants. And he does, and he bites Billy Connolly in the balls.
Yes.
But then he goes back and is like, oh, wait, no, I'm supposed to commit murder. So this dog, let's be clear, is brain is malfunctioning. But he also is okay with murder and is capable of it. I have a lot of problems with this dog, man. This dog upsets me.
We need to rewind to biting Billy Connolly on the balls. Because he bites. So he runs up and this large pit bull wraps his powerful pit bull jaws around Billy Connolly's, like, entire crotch. So, really, he bites Billy Connolly's dick off. At least he did significant structural damage to Billy Connolly's area. He should not be propositioning anybody for sex, because it's got to look like it got hit with a fucking grenade in World War II.
I don't think it matters how much money you're going to donate to the Conservancy, man. I feel like that's a waste of funds. You should probably get some reconstruction. But yeah, he does do that.
I'm Billy Connolly. Oh, by the way, my dick looks like hamburger meat right now, but if you rub up against it, I'll give you a bunch of money. I won't feel anything except excruciating agony, but it's mostly about the degradation for me, you see.
It's so weird how long we can go in this Garfield movie without talking about Garfield, because he's not doing anything. He comments. He has one big scene where he teaches all the animals to make lasagna.
Yes.
Which, and I was sort of on board with this until we got the first of not one, but two Black Eyed Peas songs.
God. Okay, you know who it just occurred to me is describes everything that Garfield does over the course of this movie? Poochie. Like,
yeah, no, he's deeply Poochie.
Yeah, he's just doing that scene in The Simpsons where Poochie shows up for the first time and he just dances a whole bunch and everybody's like, alright. That's all of Garfield's bits, is him just being like, whoa, look at me, I'm funky, I can dance!
This is a problem with lots of children's media, and we've known it for at least 20 years prior to the creation of this movie. It's that, like, when the main character shows up, we're just supposed to assume that the main character is cool just by virtue of them existing. Like, the idea that Garfield is on screen should be enough to make kids go, hey, cool, Garfield's on screen, he's going to do something cool. And that doesn't work.
Yeah.
Like, Alvin is not cool just because you say Alvin is cool. Like,
yeah. You talked before about how James Corden is manufactured consent.
Yes.
Garfield is manufactured consent, where they're really operating on the thing of, like, if you tell children that they love Garfield enough, they just kind of assume that all other kids love Garfield and go with it. Like, I don't think any kid has reached the conclusion organically of, Garfield! I love it! But instead, they're just like, I mean, seems like this is happening one way or another, so I might as well go along for the ride.
Because Garfield, as a comic character, which is where lots of people would encounter him, unless you're, like, reading one of the Garfield spinoffs, like Garfield's Pet Force, where he and Arlene and Nermal are superheroes, which I thought about making into a Garf or no Garf, but I know you would get it, get it too early. Garfield, there are children's cartoons, but Garfield as a comic strip character isn't written for children. Because children don't, well, I guess children have school, so children might hate Mondays. He's written for, I don't know, boring adults.
I don't think anybody in America, in a vacuum, enjoys Garfield. I think it is really a thing of everybody puts Garfield on their car as a bumper sticker on the basis of, well, everybody else likes Garfield, so if I put this... If I do the window suction Garfield in the back of my car, people will like it and talk about how cute I am. I don't think anybody likes Garfield.
I do like the idea that James Corden is human Garfield. That is accurate.
Oh, that's dead on.
James Corden is human Garfield. Garf or no Garf? Mm-hmm. Garfield, the musical with catitude. A children's musical wherein Garfield runs away from home after learning that this year his birthday falls on a Monday.
I'm going to say, honestly, I think that's actually too clever to be a real one. I think that actually kind of works. And I don't think they would actually think about it long enough to make that. So I'm going to say no, Garf.
That is Garf.
Fuck!
That is real. That is real.
I would have assumed that the Garfield musical would just been like, Garfield, I hate Mondays. Look at these mice.
Garfield, the musical with catitude, is real, but it's also very recent. You know why? Because Peanuts has a musical, right? Yeah. Peanuts has a musical, so we got to get one. But it took them years. It took them so long. In fact, I think it just kind of came out in 2001, and then they had to do a bunch of pandemic stuff. And this is who Garfield is for. I found a blog from Cincinnati Mom Collective, written by a blogger named Jenny Parker. And Jenny writes, Garfield the musical with catitude is playing at the Children's Theater of Cincinnati. And she writes, for those of you who may not be familiar with Garfield, he's the iconic orange tubby cat from the 1978 comic strip by Jim Davis, which chronicles his life alongside his owner, John Arbuckle, Odie the dog, and his feline friends. And then she writes, to be honest, Garfield may very well be my spirit animal, as we are the same age, and both of us are carrot tops, who may be carrying a few pounds, and have a similar cynical, sarcastic, and sometimes lackadaisical attitude. We both have a passion for food, a love of naps, coffee, and pasta, and an aversion to exercise and Mondays. That is who Garfield is for. Garfield is for Jenny Parker, the mom at Cincinnati, mom blogger at Cincinnati Mom Collective. And I guess that's fine. Like, mom, you need something too. The Jenny Parkers of the world need something too. But
no, Jenny Parker does not like Garfield. Jenny Parker just thinks that relating to her own failures in terms of Garfield will make people like her more. She doesn't like Garfield. She's just like, well, if I say I'm lazy and dumb, if I just say I'm such a Garfield, people will say, ah, that's cute, instead of being like, well, you should make something of your life. That is, nobody likes Garfield. I'm taking the stance. Everybody just thinks everybody else likes Garfield, and it's just an Emperor's New Clothes situation.
I'm not gonna fight you on this. I'm sticking with it. No one likes Garfield.
Nobody likes Garfield.
Garf or no Garf, the Merriam-Webster and Garfield Dictionary, a Garfield-licensed dictionary, which features 65,000 definitions, many of which are accompanied with black and white comics called Garfield's Crazy Definitions for Enhanced Learning.
Garf, that's real.
That is very real. That is very real.
Yeah, that one's real.
Yeah, here's the thing, Dan. There are so many on this list that I thought I made up, and then I Googled. I would make one up. Garfield musical is one. I was like, there's no way there's a Garfield musical. And I Googled it just to make sure, and I was like, it's a fucking Garfield musical.
This was kind of the thing, is when you started doing this, I didn't want to call it out in case it would ruin it, but I was like 90% certain that they were all going to be real.
I thought about it. You
won't be able to come up with anything stupid enough to not have been made over the course of the 90s and early 2000s.
I did. I thought about doing that exact thing to you, but I was like...
I think the only thing that I would confidently say doesn't exist is a Garfield-themed marital aid. That is the one thing...
I thought about putting a Garfield diaphragm in there, right? Like,
yeah. I could see Garfield tampons being a thing.
Oh, like. Garfield is on the like Sam Club brand of diapers. I learned that over the course of my research.
Marty, what if there was a Garfield tampon and at the base of it was just him holding up an umbrella? I actually want that made now. So I have a question for you. So, the Garfield comic strips, read them as a kid. Garfield only ever does his dialogue in thought balloons. Did you think as a kid that people... I thought that Garfield was talking to people and John could understand him. I thought as a kid, Garfield was able to communicate telepathically. Like, that was... Because I was like, John is clearly reacting to what Garfield is saying. It's a thought balloon, but John must be able to understand him in some way, so Garfield must be a low-level telepath.
Or John is.
Or John is. John is cursed to read the minds of animals, and in a twist of fate, he just got the worst one.
Yeah, I think that's why, like, Odie lives with him, because, if he's gonna be with any animal, he wants one that has no thoughts. That's why John picked up the only animal that is non-sentient.
Yes, because he was like, I just need some peace. I want to own a dog, but I don't want to just be hearing like, hey, 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 which is just a dog's entire internal monologue.
Which, by the way, this is another example of how fucking lazy Jim Davis is. Which is that, remember, Odie was canonically not originally John's dog.
Yeah.
Odie belonged to John's best friend, Lyman. Okay. There was another man in the strip named Lyman, who was John's best friend, and sometimes John and Lyman would talk to each other. But that meant that that Jim Davis had to come up with dialogue between two human beings that would talk to each other. And so he just didn't have Lyman say goodbye. Just stopped doing Lyman altogether and left Odie. Which is just so fucking lazy.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. He just gave up after a certain point.
I think Lyman is in like less than 20 strips total.
Yeah, he just consolidated down. Motherfucker made a deal with the devil. Okay, is there anything? So another point I want to make about Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties. God, I hate saying that name out loud. While Garfield is just doing antics all over the palace, enjoying being rich now, Tim Curry's prince is now, he was found by John, and he has been, they're taking him around, and they think he's Garfield.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that part, yeah.
Yeah, and you'd think that it would be a thing of like, well,
I forgot prince about that is, half of the movie.
Yes, because it's really boring, because you'd think that the whole point of it would be Prince is, you know, he's rich, so he's a piece of shit. But he's running around with the lower class, and John and Odie are teaching Prince the meaning of, like, being a good person and being humble. Except not really.
None of that happens.
Because Prince is actually already a pretty chill dude.
Yeah.
Like, his big thing is he's like, I'm too good to eat lasagna. And then he eats some lasagna and he's like, actually, I've changed nothing about my philosophy as a person, but now I enjoy lasagna. Like, that's the sum of his growth. He doesn't really have a lot to go because he's already, like, he's not great, but he's a pretty cool, he's a nice guy.
And here's the deal, right? Like Prince is not having trouble adjusting to the life of a commoner at all. In fact, he starts to lose his memory unexplainedly after he eats the lasagna, and Odie has to remind him that he belongs at Castle Carlyle, because he says something like, yes, there was something I was supposed to do, or something, what was this? And Odie has to, like, point out Castle Carlyle on a map, and he goes, oh, right, that's where I'm from. Here's the deal, if you have Prince and you got rid of Garfield, go home, man. Leave Garfield there. Like, that is, it's amazing how not John's problem this is. He traded up in cats, and
so it's, and meanwhile, they show Prince being rich and the top cat who gets waited on hand and foot, and he's, you know, he has a bunch of butlers bring him food, and he walks around his castle being like, oh, it's so good to be rich. And then he, you know, he goes to John's, is fine. And Garfield does all the same stuff that Prince does, except 1,000 times worse.
Yeah.
He unleashes a reign of despotic terror over the working class of the castle, making them cook him food day and night, running them to the bone, destroying all their property. Because it's like, they fuck up the Prince and the Pauper thing, because the Prince starts out and he's a piece of shit. And then he goes down to being poor, and he becomes a good person. And meanwhile, the pauper is rich, and, you know, he has a fish out of water, but maybe he learns, like, self-respect or something from being a thing. Instead, neither of them learn absolutely anything.
No.
And the prince has no character growth necessary, and the pauper only learns to be worse.
Yes. Which is why it's so weird, like, when they try to play up a sad moment of growth. Because Garfield overhears the dog and the parrot talking about him, saying, that house cat is so dumb, but we need him for the next couple of days for reasons. And then, like, there's a really sad, like, melancholy, like, acoustic guitar that plays, and Garfield's hurt feelings are hurt. But then he has the opportunity to leave. Prince shows up again, and everything should be fine. And, like, Garfield can go find John at any time and leave. But then they're like, we need to go fight this guy. And it's so incredibly not John or Garfield's problem. Go home. Go home. Garfield, you don't like these guys. Just a minute ago, you said, well, I hate you. Goodbye. And he just does a about face. It's so dumb. Super dumb.
Garfield's, like, moment of despair doesn't come because he realizes that he's a jerk. It's that he realizes that these people don't like him.
Yes.
He's not like, oh, man, I really gotta get my act together and be a better version of myself. He's like, what, these pricks don't even like me!
I need to
fuck you!
And he starts to miss John. He misses John, yeah. And by that I mean I miss this giant pushover that just does nothing.
That has no standards for how he should be treated, and is too vacant to understand that I'm ruining his life.
So finally Billy Connolly snaps and just gets a gun.
Yes.
Or in this case, a crossbow.
And just starts chasing. He starts chasing Garfield around the property, trying to kill him. Prince shows back up, and they team up to confuse Billy Connolly and fake him out. Basically, the big payoff is Garfield uses his horrible chaos monster powers to torment Billy Connolly to the point of insanity.
At the same time that the solicitors, the lawyers, are coming to officially declare Prince dead, and thus giving the castle or the grounds and everything to Billy Connolly. So that's what's happening. Yeah. Billy Connolly's trying to distract the lawyers that are there long enough for him to get rid of the cat so that he can come and say that the cat is dead so that he can have the property. It's not going well.
Yeah, and they have all the antics of the animals fucking with Billy Connolly, and Billy Connolly going like, oh no, ouch, oh, my suit has been ripped, oh, I've fallen into a pond, what an indignity, and that all happens. It culminates with him running into the lawyers, who are like, where's Prince, what's going on, we don't believe you, and then he holds them all hostage with an antique crossbow that clearly hasn't been fired for, like, over 500 years. John shows up, no idea what the fuck is going on, takes the crossbow from him, and then Billy Connolly holds them hostage again with a antique blunderbuss that is still on, on its display case that
It's still in frame!
And he's just, like, waving that around.
He points this prop gun at Liz's head, and, like, it's still got wooden tablets on it.
Like, and everybody's like, better hold still. It might have traces of gunpowder still in it. Like, yeah. This is the climax of the movie. And then they take him out, and he's arrested, and then they have a big pool party where all of the animals get to have a little one-liner about how cool pools are. And they're like, I love swimming in this big lake. Oh, that's because you're a duck. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, yeah, I want to point this something out. There is a little bit with the ducks where every single time the royal cat shows up, the ducks go, meh, 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 the ducks are like the royal chorus. Yeah. I laughed at that. I like the ducks.
Yeah.
Garf then, or no Garf?
You hit me.
The Garfield 3D cake pan set. A stainless steel pan from the late 70s and 80s that allowed people to make Garfield-shaped cakes by filling a piece with batter and then putting another front piece over it and then turning the whole thing sideways inside of the oven.
Garf.
Real. Garf. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's real. That's real.
Yeah.
Garfield
Style, a line of Garfield-themed hair care products and accessories, including orange and black hair curlers with detachable cat ears.
Oh, that can't be real. That can't be. That has to be something you came up with.
It is.
No Garf.
No Garf. It's no Garf.
No Garf. Thank fucking God. I think I would have said that we have to start a revolutionary army and overthrow capitalism once and for all. I'd be like, Marty, we gotta go get guns, and we gotta get berets, and we gotta just start rallying people in the streets. This has gone on too long.
Alright, since we're coming to the end of the movie, I'm gonna do the last two Garf or no Garfs. I have so many of these. This is an obvious one. Garfield Collector's Edition Monopoly, a special edition of Monopoly where the railroads are replaced with Italian food.
Italian food and not like Garfield characters?
The railroads are Italian food.
Oh, the railroads. The pieces are Garfield.
The pieces are Garfield characters.
Oh, okay. No, Garf, and I have a reason for this. I don't think they would have been creative enough to do the Italian food. I think it would have just been like Garfield Railroad. I don't think they would have put that much thought into it. No, Garf.
Garf.
Fuck.
That one's a Garf.
I see, the basis I'm doing is not it's too stupid to exist. I'm like, it's not stupid enough. Okay. Hit me with the last one.
Garfcast, the official Paws Inc. podcast exploring the world of Garfield with interviews from the Paws Inc. team. Learn everything you've ever wanted to know about the world's favorite fat cat.
I have so many follow-up questions. I want to, like, grill you on it, but I don't... Garf.
No Garf. No Garf. There is no official Paws Inc. podcast. However...
Yeah.
This is true. While watching Garfield Tale of Two Kitties, I emailed Paws Inc. and I pitched them the idea of sponsoring us to do Comics Corner segments or Garfield related stuff. I'm realizing now that like the only thing I'll have to show them is this podcast where I shit all over Garfield for an hour and a half.
Oh, okay. But We're gonna send them the theme song. We're just gonna send them the theme song, and they're gonna be so impressed by it. They're gonna give us a shitload of money. And listen, everybody at the Patreon has to not tell them that we did this. Okay, we just have to say that we're Garfield enthusiasts. Honestly, you know what our claim to fame could be? We're the guys that got the Mark Trail dude fired.
It's true.
So yeah, we're powerful in this sphere.
I emailed them Friday night. We'll see what happens. They'll never email us back. But yes, I emailed Paws Inc. about this.
We would just have to do like an investigative series on it. Be like, all right, let's get to the bottom of Odie. What is Odie's internality? Like, let's talk about Nurmal. Let's really dig down into
Nurmal. I specifically
Nurmal.
Said that I was inspired by Jamie Loftus's ACK cast, where she breaks down all of Kathy. Right.
I think we're going to get it. I think we're going to get it, my man.
We might get this gig.
I think we could get this gig. In which case, we'll get some of that sweet, sweet Garfield money. And all of my criticisms are invalid. And I disavow every one of them. You know, people can grow and change. We learn new things. I've come to really appreciate the craft and whimsy of Garfield.
Garfield is not James Corden. Garfield is George Carlin. Like, that is how brilliant Garfield is.
You know, the thing I really appreciate about Garfield is his incisive wit and understanding. And, you know, he really cuts to the core of, like, before Garfield, did we really think about not liking Mondays? Did that really occur to us that we did not care for Mondays?
He touched on something in the zeitgeist.
Yes. I think he really captured something about the human condition. And I think we don't give it enough credit. And you know what? I'll say Garfield and Heathcliff, nothing alike. Heathcliff has no claim to that. They're both orange cats. I don't see it. I've read them both. I think Garfield is a superior strip. And I think Heathcliff is in the dustbin of history where he belongs. So talk to us.
Talk to us, Paws.
Send us a figure and we will probably take your first offer.
And that's Tale of Two Kitties. I was waiting so long for that reveal. I was sitting on that reveal that I sent that email for so long.
What if we, instead of doing an official podcast, they just give us a sponsorship deal? So instead of doing Nature Box ads, we're just like, this ad is brought to you by Garfield. Remember Garfield? It holds up. It's pretty good. You guys gotta stop talking shit. Garfield. Use the coupon code Garfield to tell your friends about Garfield and how you actually like it. It's pretty good. Oh, shit. I think that's a good closer.
That's it. That's the episode. I'm not talking about this movie anymore. I barely wanted to talk about this movie to begin with. Patreon subscribers, I also hate Mondays. And that's all we've got for you. Thank you for continuing to support the show. Tell your friends. Tell them to give us money. And we'll be back with some more bonus materials for you. Until then,
you gotta go it on, young lady. Jesus
Christ. Garfield.
You gotta go it on, young lady.
Jesus Christ. Garfield.
You gotta go it on, young lady.
Jesus Christ.
Garfield.
You gotta go it on, young lady.
Jesus Christ. Garfield.
We'll be right back.